Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Well-Rounded Wealth Podcast. This is episode 32. Jack, how are we doing?
We're doing well. We're doing really well. I'm not lagging. We've been having a lagging issue with me on my end, but I'm looking good so far. Okay, sweet.
It's just good. This instance where whenever Jack walks, or like he's so suave that he just goes in slow-mo. Movie stars just, now.
That the human eye catches it at slow motion. It's like looking good.
It's like 90 frames per second instead of 60.
Yeah, just, exactly.
Real slow.
Okay, but it's looking good. It's looking good. So good. I'm happy. Take four. Let's run it. Let's do this episode. Yeah, welcome back, everybody. Patrick, I'm seeing a new location in your background. Yep.
A little bit of a switch up. So I have moved into a new place. And have finally gotten some stuff unpacked. I was living like you were, quote unquote, stereotypical boy with no women's touch for the past 2 weeks. It was.
Wait, so, yeah. What did you have access to?
Yeah, I'll walk everyone through the process. So I left with my old roommate, basically all my stuff, like some of the old like living room furniture, kitchen furniture, all the plates, you know, kitchen supplies, because I was like, I'm just gonna get a new one. I move in and I'm in the middle of this big deal. So for the past 2 weeks, all I've had and all I set up when I moved in was my desk, my computers, and my bed. Like, that was it. Everything else was in boxes or bags in the living room area, just sitting there. I had one plate. I had two cups. Like, I don't even have a table, like a kitchen table. So like I was eating at my desk. Like,
wait, do you have anything in the kitchen to eat, like a kitchen counter or anything like that?
I have a kitchen counter, like, so I can cook and stuff, but
you didn't eat there.
No, I like just sat because like I don't have like a bar stool, like island or anything. It's like a standing kitchen counter. So like I was like, oh, where am I gonna sit? I'm like, all right, well, I have one seat, so like I guess it's there. So
do you have a couch yet for like the living room or anything?
No, I'm getting one. Actually, it's in the back of my car. I just have to get it out and put that in there. You know, some other essential living. Took probably like 5 or 6 hours on Friday and was like, all right, I need to go and just get some living essentials. So I have plates now. I have some cups.
That's good.
Got pans and stuff. But yeah, so I have the basics, but I'm renovating the place anyway. So I'm living simply.
So that's hype.
If anyone ever lays eyes upon my place in the next month, don't judge me. It's going to look
at the end. It's going to be a work in progress.
Yes. Yeah. So, my bed's not on the ground. Don't worry. I'm not one of those guys.
You have a bed frame?
I have a bed frame. It is a foot off the ground. as we nowadays symbolize that as you've made it.
You've made it when your bed isn't on the ground.
Hell yeah.
I wouldn't even mind that from like a vibe point, like just sleeping low. I have a bed frame. I mean, it's behind me. Yeah. But trust
In college, my last year, because I knew I was graduating early, so I was like, I don't want to spend money on a bed because I was moving out of the dorms and got an apartment. So I was like, screw it. I'm taking my old bed from when I was like a kid. I put two twin beds together on the ground, and like there was this strap that went around them, and I like conjoin them together. So and they were uneven. It was probably like about an inch off, so it was like you're like laying like this. So like,
oh, that's
ended up just sleeping on one side of the bed, and it was funny because I had a girlfriend at the time, and it was always just like she's stuck in the crack, you know. The two beds that are together.
But, that's really funny.
I won't do that again.
That's understandable.
It's convenient if it's by yourself, because you're just like you kind of just roll over on the bed.
Right.
But yeah, it's it was a funny time. I was like, I actually had the same setup. I had a dresser, I had two beds on the ground, and I had my desk with my computers on it. it. But
it's all you needed.
I'm a simple man, guys.
How are you cooking? Did you have your kitchen supplies?
Ah, great question, John. For the last 2 weeks, I've been living off rotisserie chicken. Pretty much every day.
So glad Harris I asked Teeter. That question.
I was like, do I want to cook?
It's not a bad diet.
No, it works.
That's apparently what the Marvel actors do whenever they need to get absolutely jacked. They just say they eat rotisserie chicken and broccoli every day. Who knows if that's true? No. There might be steroids involved.
Yeah, a little bit of needles and, you know, some experimental usage. No, but I was literally like, all right, the stove I have right now, it's a little older. So I know I'm gonna gut it out and replace it anyway. So I'm like, I either go buy a pan and then cook on this whole thing. It's just going to be, you know, inefficient, probably gonna piss me off. Or I'm like, fuck it. Rotisserie chicken day six.
Wait, so your thought process was, do I get cooking supplies, but not the ones I really prefer? Or do I just get rotisserie chicken? Because even if I have variety of what I'm cooking, if it's not perfect to the exact way I used to do it, it won't be worth it.
Yeah. I'm very particular. No, but it was more around like, because I know I'm taking all the cabinets out of the kitchen and stuff. So like, I don't want to put stuff in there and have to take it out because I'm tearing them all out. So I'm like,
that isn't it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm just, you know what? I'm thinking in the future a little bit, like I'm just going to save myself the pain in the ass of packing everything up, unloading it.
How long is this going to be, this process of
renovating?
Yeah, at least the kitchen cabinets and things like that.
I'd say it probably take a month or two.
Gotcha. You know?
But I'm
so rotisserie chicken for the next month or two.
I'm just gonna be a chicken in 2 months, man. I'm just gonna be gobbling on this fucking podcast.
Honestly, I don't even have that big of a right to make fun of this because I pretty much eat the same thing every day.
Dude, it's like, great.
Yeah, I do eggs and I do a little egg sandwich. Like, throw some cheese on there, some salt and pepper, and some sourdough. I freaking love sourdough bread. I get the Trader Joe's
bread,
and I pretty much do that every morning for my breakfast. Sometimes I'll switch it up a little bit. Bought some bacon at the store the other day. I'm gonna throw some bacon in there. I'm gonna cook up some bacon.
There you go.
My lunches are either like sandwiches with lunch meat that I get at the store, or I do some pasta. Or maybe a little frozen dish from the Trader Joe's section of frozen food. Like I did a lasagna today for Sunday. Yeah. And then dinner's usually pasta of some sort. I just don't know. I don't know how to cook that much. And I don't know. I should just like throw some other stuff into my routine. If I'm being honest.
Dude, honestly, like, I mean, I've gone through every single diet, and I mean, you guys have heard, and for anyone new that might be listening, like, I've done everything, or pretty much everything. Right. And I think once you find, like, your meal that you can just stick to and eat, like, the same thing every day, it takes out, especially if you're trying to be, like, health conscious, it, like, takes out that, like, oh, my God, what should I eat this? Can I eat this? Like, you know, these macros. And I think that's a great thing. And then you just supplement it with, like, hey, if you know you're going out to dinner tonight, it's like, all right, you know, I'm going to change breakfast up a little bit because I know I'm going to have a good dinner or something like that. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
It does make dinners like that more special.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed. Like, if you are going out, it, like, truly does feel like a treat. You're like, oh, my God, like, I'm going out to dinner. I'm getting some, like, good food cooked by not me.
Yep.
It actually feels sick. Used to hate going out to dinner when I was a kid. I absolutely hated it. And my parents were so annoyed at how much I hated it. And like my sister, I don't remember my sister loving it either. She liked it definitely more than me. And this is when we were young, like I'm talking like elementary school young. I hated it. I was like, I don't want to go anywhere. We're here. Let's just be here. Let's just hang out here.
Yeah.
Be like a Friday night. I'm like, I just want to be here. I don't want to get in the back seat of the minivan and drive to some restaurant to get the kids grilled cheese. or the kids cheese pizza or the kids chicken fingers. However, if the kids menu had a maze on it, that was a bit of a game changer. I loved the mazes on the kids menus, but that was all I liked on the kids menus.
Yeah. So I think I have always liked it. I'm a little bit of a foodie. Like I enjoy Chef Pat, you know, should pop up. Yeah. We should pop up. God, if we could edit these videos, you pop up that picture of me like cooking freaking omelets at 3 a.m.
Oh, I actually totally could. I still have some of those in my vault of saved videos.
You should try.
I should try but, to find something.
Yeah. So I like going, like, I'll go out to dinner sometimes just by myself to try a new place. I think that's enjoyable. So.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it also hit me how expensive it is to go out versus eating at home.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I guess on the rotisserie chicken diet, it's been like about even because it's like $8 for a chicken, like $9.
How many chickens are you eating a day? The whole thing?
I really just eat one meal a day, pretty much. That's what I've been doing.
Gotcha. Are you eating the whole chicken?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That Damn. Chicken does not stand a chance.
So you're eating a chicken a day.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's insane. And that's been 2 weeks? That's been 14 chickens in 14 days?
Not every single day I've eaten chicken, but, like, you know, pretty much. Yeah. It's definitely been about, you know, 10 chickens for sure. I can comfortably say 10 chickens have been consumed
That's awesome.
By one guy in 2 weeks.
That's so awesome. I love that so much.
like that's really my diet, though, is like chicken, ground turkey, or steak, and fish occasionally. That's pretty much all I eat.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, man.
Nope.
Chicken, no judgment from me. That sounds like a good diet to me. I love chicken. I think I eat chicken every day as well. Not full ones, but if I could, I would.
You can do it. Yeah, like I enjoy fasting, especially in the morning, like fasted workouts and stuff like that. So yeah, I pretty much I'll drink like the AG1 and electrolytes in the morning, and then I'm just. That's what gets me through until about dinner time, and I'm good. So,
I've been unintentionally doing that. I wake up, consume electrolytes. Yesterday, Cole and I did a workout. My roommate, we did lifting, like we did like a kind of a push day, and then he did a jump rope routine with me, and I didn't have any food beforehand, and I was like feeling like shit by the end of that. It was rough.
I thought you were
it's
say,
probably.
I thought you were gonna say like, and I felt great. I was like, yeah, see.
No, I was like, my stomach was growling. My like body was feeling weak. And also, we did intense. We did it outside the jump rope, and it was like in the 90s yesterday. That was kind of a reason why we did it, because like. Kind of like, oh, it's like the hottest day of the year, like let's shred the jump rope out there and let's go for it. So by the end I was like dripping in sweat, like I there were probably zero calories, there's probably nothing left to burn because I hadn't eaten anything.
Yeah. So, Jack's just 0% body fat guy. Nothing left to burn.
No, like I had not consumed any calories in probably the past 12 hours, and then I burned a ton. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know this with you. Please feed Jack. Jack needs chickens.
So like I was like dead. I was like, I need food, and I need food now. And I need more water. I was like, I need cheese. Good Lord. And then I did. But it was great. It did still feel great. Like after it was completed, especially like doing the burnout. It was one of those like, yes, I need food, but I do feel good.
Yeah.
I feel really good. I feel really accomplished. But if I don't have something soon, I might pass out.
Yeah. And you definitely have to like train yourself to get on those type of diets because, I mean, the society we grow up in is like, oh, you eat your breakfast and then your lunch and then your dinner. But if you look back, you know, even 100 years ago, like people didn't eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That was not a concept that everyone had. Why did that start? I forget when it started, but it was the whole propaganda around breakfast. When did breakfast become a thing? Let's see. Okay, yeah, and during the Industrial Revolution, okay, so 1860, so maybe a little bit more than 100 years ago, but it was breakfast is break fast. So it's more like it was like farther along ago, so 1600s is I guess when it came to like be, but it wasn't necessarily normalized until the Industrial Revolution, because that's when the whole entire concept around, you know, you have your 9 to 5, so it's like you break fast in the morning and then you do lunch break and then you have your dinner break, so it kind of just scheduled people out. But like, yeah, your body really does not need to eat at 3 times throughout the day. So
do you think like you just eat one and you think that's a healthy thing?
Yeah, it obviously depends, a few factors depends on what if you're training for anything, your body specifically, like what you're very receptive to. Like for some people who are especially like, you know, insulin receptive or stuff like that, if they have a bunch of carbs in the morning or they don't have any sugars in the morning, like they could crash really early in the day. So it's a little bit personal specific, but I do believe that, you know, you go back 150 years, 200 years, 100 years, whatever it is, that every person could 100% exist on just one meal a day or even not eating every day. So, because, I mean, our diets, especially in America, we eat a lot of food. Like, we eat a lot of food. I mean, you even look at Europeans and Asian cultures, they eat probably a quarter of what we eat. Like Europeans, they'll have a coffee and maybe a croissant for breakfast. And then they have, you know, a glass of wine and like an appetizer or something for lunch. And then they have this big, more familial style dinner. And I think that was a lot more normal back then. And that's I guess somewhat of what I follow. So like I'll try and get all my calories in at the end of the day, but I'm doing it consciously to where like of those calories that I'm eating at the end of the day, I know I need to eat a certain way in order to fuel my morning workout and then also my afternoon workout. So
I see.
Yeah.
So you're doing two workouts too. Two workouts on like not a lot of food consumption.
I do two workouts pretty much every day.
Is it, what kind of workouts is it? Are they different from each other, I'm guessing?
Yeah. Usually like a run usually morning is like a run or yoga. And then afternoon's a lift. Slash like HIIT workout. Today knocked out 10 miles. So it's feeling good. Yesterday was like 8 mile bike ride and mountain bike ride and a lift. So yeah, which also not normal. Would not recommend everyone do that. Don't take this as advice. I was talking to some buddies the other day. I have a screw loose. Don't worry. I was talking to some buddies the other day and I was like, telling them, I was like, yeah, it's, you know, I've been doing my morning runs and, you know, lifts in the afternoon. They're like, how long have you been doing 2-a-days? I was like, I don't know, like every day. They're like, that's not normal. I was like, yeah, I guess. Yeah, you have a point. I must have told you that. But I mean, that's what I grew up doing. Like, even in high school and playing a college sport, you know, you do, you wake up, you work out, and you practice later or something like that. So I guess it's a little, my body's more used to it.
I get that. So. I definitely understand that perspective of like, you have an activity that is kind of a workout in and of itself, but then you also just worked out as well. So that does make sense that you've gotten used to like kind of a twice a day kind of mentality with that.
Yeah. And I think we talked about it last time or maybe I was talking with a friend, like the whole hybrid athlete thing where it's like people are running and lifting. I'm like, that's just an athlete. Like unless there is an extent to like where people are running ridiculously long miles and lifting super heavy, that I would call a hybrid athlete. But like if you go out and run 3 miles and then have a lifting workout in the afternoon, like that was every day for the past 10 years of my life. Like, and then we had to practice on top of that and play games. Like, you're just training. Like,
yeah, that's what y'all always did. I mean, what sport do you not lift for at all and nor do cardio at all? Yeah. Like, yeah, you always do both, no matter what it is. I could see someone's mind saying that like soccer is very cardio based, but I know for a fact that they also lift all the time.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially leg strength. Football. Leg strength is everything, and of course, football. Yeah, that's a lot of conditioning from a cardiovascular level. And I mean, if you're a lineman, all you're doing is lifting too.
Yeah, you got to be freaking huge. I would say they probably do a little less cardio, but like basketball,
you're doing. I'm sure, but like at their practices, I'm sure they're running sprints and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but yeah, I would say probably for a lineman, they get their cardio when they're actually practicing and playing the sport. And then then it's their lifting in the gym when they're not at practice. Yeah.
Dude, I can't imagine living at that size. Like, I'm pretty heavy right now. Like, I'm probably 215, 220 pounds on like a daily basis. And like those guys are 100 pounds more than me.
That is pretty nuts. Like,
that's freaking... And they probably aren't as fast as me, which is stupid.
Dude, I weigh like 145. Just so we can, I know it's just neck up for people for any visual watchers, but Patrick is significantly larger than me. It's like I
have had, but Jack the has 0% body fat. Oh wait, we missed that part.
Like what you're saying about linemen right now and how you can't imagine that. That's like me imagining like being your size from my perspective.
That's like you carrying me on your back every day.
It is. Wait, so what'd you say? You're like 215. Is that what you said?
215, 220. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like 145 ish. Yeah.
Dude,
that's like it's like 370, I mean, or something like that, 380.
Yeah. Like, I move a lot. Like, I run a lot. But, like, running with an extra 100 pounds, like, God, no wonder their knees are messed up. Like, that's a lot of weight.
That is, like, you running with me on your back.
Dude, yeah, I know.
It's crazy.
Stupid. Well, this is nothing to do with what we were planning on talking about today, but for the last
20 not even minutes, kind of, but I'm kind of enjoying it.
This has been your health talk about with Jack and I.
So Patrick works. What we have learned: Patrick works out twice a day. I do not, and Patrick is bigger than me than most of you probably realize. That's what we've learned.
And I eat chickens.
And you eat chickens devoured. Like a motherfucker. Just chickens. And I eat eggs. So I eat, before they're hatched. That's what I'm eating. So yeah, anyways, what were we talking about today? Providing value when not asked, right?
Yes, giving without asking or expecting anything in return. Just like the chickens, they give to me, but I'll never give them anything back.
Yeah, you ate them.
I was trying to segment that, but
yeah. I mean, great segue. No, it's you're not wrong. That chicken gave you everything. Okay. All right. All right. We can do this. We can snipe this transition. Okay. So yeah. So we were talking about kind of providing value when no one's asking, where no one's expecting it, and kind of how that could be beneficial to you in many ways, not just more than one, like kind of as in a personal life standpoint, also like a career standpoint, which kind of bleeds into financial standpoint. And like, value is everything at the end of the day, and what you bring to the table is definitely how you're value is measured, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from an emotional standpoint as well. So what was the first point on your mind when you kind of brought up talking about this, Patrick?
I think everyone thinks of giving as a very external thing, which it is. Like, the process of giving is taking something you possess or a skill you have and bestowing it upon another person or group. However, I think, you know, if people just flip the narrative of it and looked at how it actually makes them feel, like one of my favorite things and one of the things I get the most joy from is giving. Like, being able to provide value at no cost to other people is such a blessing, and just makes you feel good. Because when you see that reaction on another person's face, knowing that you've what are you laughing about?
I'm sorry. No, please keep going. I'm thinking about everything you're saying in the most inappropriate way you could think of. That look on their face when you just give. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm off my shit today.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, when you give, they don't expect anything.
I'm talking to you. Now I have to frame this in a way that's not going to sexualize and next month.
No, I'm good. I got it out.
When you give to a friend and you know that they're at a loss of words for the thing that you have given them.
Keep going.
Then I think that allows you to know that, like, hey, I've incrementally helped this person's life and expect nothing in return. Bro, you gotta get out whatever you have in there. Just let out like a pipsqueak laugh.
That was so bad, dude. I feel like I'm like back in like the classroom, yeah, where like I think it's something funny and you just can't laugh, and it just makes you want to laugh even more when like the teacher's teaching. That's exactly what I feel like. But yeah, no, okay. I am on your page. I think, you know, really giving to a person, just seeing how great it makes them feel is awesome. And sometimes you may not even get anything back in return. Lord knows I've been in that situation. Perhaps you have too, Patrick.
All right. Why don't you just tell us what the situation that is in your head? Would you like to share with the class, like, Jack?
I'm thinking of a more, you know, in the bedroom situation. That's all. I don't want to take it further than that. Friends and family, listen to this.
Good Lord. All right. This is going to be the funny bullshit episode.
This has been the best episode
without,
ever.
Without asking.
That's what I'm say. It's always important to ask. let's make that clear.
How did we go from eating chickens and just
I can tell you. There's a really easy segue there.
What? Oh.
Okay. All right.
Either you just watched a movie that had some sexual component in it, or just this man is horny.
That is false, and I detest such accusations. I don't even know what you're talking about. Okay, I'm done. Let's really get into it and actually talking about providing value without being asked. Here's what I thought of when you first sent it. I was thinking of it from a very technical and kind of corporate scenario. For example, like, you know, the skills that you have and the value that you can provide to somebody is exactly why someone would pay you money. And the more valuable of skills that you acquire, the more amount of money you'll likely to be paid by someone. It's all about how useful you are to somebody else. The more elite your skills are, the more like the less competition, like you're one of the only people that has sort of skills. So the more niche of a skill you have, definitely makes you more valuable. For example, I mean, a lot of it's been kind of gate kept by colleges, right? So like degrees. If you have your doctoral degree, your medical degree, then you are extremely valuable versus someone who just has their bachelor's. And from a money standpoint, if you have a master's degree in something, that usually kind of equates to more money, which is why people are willing to spend the money to get that degree, because it opens the door to more opportunities to make your money back and eventually pay off any debt that you may have.
True. And I mean, I think our point was like, we're talking about giving without asking anything in return, or just being able to. So like, you know, in the education and career space, you're saying almost someone who's hired, who has a greater qualification, being mm-hmm. that they have a master's or doctorate. What about someone, who doesn't have one of those, or it's in an instance where it's not required? Like, even mm-hmm. if you do have one of those, what is your perception of providing value to someone without asking for compensation in any way, shape, or form?
I would say, and is this still kind of from a business perspective, or is this an anything perspective?
Yeah, in the business sense.
I mean, I did it once. I did it once when I was trying to get the attention of this. He was a comedian and he had a big podcast, and I got his contact info and I reached out once, and like he responded, like just to being interested in working for him and offering to help him, and like briefly told him what I could do. He was like, oh, okay, that sounds cool. Like, maybe we could set something up sometime. And then I followed up and actually edited his content for him and showed him the content. And that was kind of like a demonstrating my value kind of moment, where it's like,
yeah.
And I was kind of like, here, I was just messing around editing. Feel free to use these if you want to. So it was basically like, here's what I can do for you. There it is right there. I like literally presented the value.
Yeah.
And that caught his attention much more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if it's quality too of what you give, and I think it always should be quality, you should always have the goal of leaving an interaction having given more than you received, because it's also a psychological backdrop to that. As mm-hmm. humans, we feel that people who have given us something, we are inclined to feel almost indebted to them. So it's like, we need to go back, and it's like, oh crap, I know, like, Jack gave me that thing one time, so like I need to give him this opportunity. And I think that's not necessarily that you are giving for that to trigger that, but it's almost a tool in your arsenal saying like, hey, I've provided value to you before. Like, what else can I help with? What other opportunities can you open my door to, knowing that I'm willing to go above and beyond another person in the same field?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, the competition levels introduced in that aspect too.
And that's why I think, you know, you go into a competitive field, if you have the bandwidth to do it, like, give for free, because you are then practicing, right? Like, if you're say you're video editing, just start giving for free, like, to practice your video editing, because you'll by giving that one, people will let you know if it's good or if it's bad. You know, if you don't get a reply or you don't get a lot of traction off of it, probably can be improved. And then if you do get a lot of traction, you know you're on the right path. So keep iterating on those things.
That's true. And if someone doesn't want your content and it's free, that's pretty telling that you have some work to do before you could even monetize whatever it is you're doing. Because if someone doesn't even want your work for free, then why would anyone pay for it?
Yeah. And I think there's a Warren Buffett's got a great story. It's like when he went to work, what was that guy's name? I'm gonna forget. Like, basically his mentor, he offered to work for his mentor for free. And his mentor replied and said, you are too expensive, or your price is too expensive. Like, him working for free is too expensive because it takes him, his mentor, more time to train him. And his time is more valuable than free. So, which is pretty telling to, it's a pretty telling note to say like, hey, you have to be able to provide value to someone in some way in this world. Like, no matter what it is, in order to progress yourself forward, provide value, like, give. And when you're first starting out, give, even when you're super experienced, give without expecting anything in return. And naturally, I think stuff will come back to you. Almost, I don't want to make it seem like karma, but, you know, there's a little bit of karma.
Yeah. wait, I have a question. I don't know if you know the answer to this, but how did the guy become Warren Buffett's mentor if he said he didn't want to do it? Did he just eventually do it?
So originally he said, no, your time's too expensive. And then he had a different opening, like, in the future, like a few months in the future. It was his professor at Columbia. Oh God, this is just going to annoy me. So I'm going to look it up. Hold on. Warren.
But yeah, but another interesting aspect of that is, I mean, that's also a guy where, you know, a lot of the rich and powerful say that time is infinitely more valuable to them than money, because they've made enough money to the point where money is irrelevant. They'll always have all the money they need. So now it's all about time. And that's the most important currency to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben Graham is his mentor. And like,
Okay.
I would 100% agree. I'm at the point where it's just like, I value my time incrementally more than, unless it's an outsized return money wise. Like, I mean, you can do so much more with your time when you start buying it back. It's not only that you can do more, but it frees up space for your head to not worry about as much, which I think that is a very underrated thing that we overlook. So like, I know there's a lot of people that it's like, oh, you can save until zero. Like, you can't save more than zero. But when you get to the point where you can like start buying back your time and not having to worry about the fiscal impact of it. Like, it's just so much, it's just like this, like, it's like, wow, all right, I don't need to worry about that. So then I can, you know, then you can almost focus on giving more for continuing to give more for free for people that are more valuable than you, that can open more doors for you in the future, which I think is a very interesting concept.
Yeah. Another guy that I listen to, Dave Ramsey, who I'm sure you've heard of. I'm sure probably everyone listening has heard of. He's everywhere. His social media marketing team kicks ass.
Oh yeah, they're huge. I think they're
massive.
Like the third watched public or privately held television channel in the country or something like
That's crazy.
Or radio channel.
Yeah. Yeah, they're insane and they've done great. But yeah, that's one thing he always says is the best part about being rich is that now you get to be generous. And he goes, and that's where you realize how awesome being rich is where you are in a place where your bases are covered and now you just get to be generous as hell. And it's awesome.
Yeah. And I would say this, I'm nowhere near him, obviously. I wouldn't consider myself rich, but I think of the times that I have been able to give to other people, it's, you know, you go out with a group of friends and you're able to be like, hey guys, don't worry about this dinner. It's on me. Like, I love the feeling you get from that and the reaction you get from that. Cause one, it's your closest, like the people who are closest to you, and you get to see their reaction of just, you know, hopefully it's true friends, but your appreciation for what the gesture means. And I'm not saying that, you know, you spend that money somewhere else or you give somewhere else to like people in need. That's very fulfilling as well. It's just being able to, you know, deepen that connection through act of kindness is pretty special.
Yeah, it's it is pretty cool. And I've been in the boat where that's happened to me by my friends and like by you and not only you. Sometimes I hate it because like I never want to, and like I never hate the person, but I'm like, I hate that I'm in a situation where the person felt like they they do it because they want to, and I know that. Sometimes it's like, I wish I could be that person, or like, I wish we could be on the same page, and like, you know, I wish I could do the next one, but I can't necessarily do the next one and like pay for everybody's meal or something like that. So sometimes it frustrates me, which I think is really interesting. Because you know what I mean? It's not frustration towards anybody. It's almost just frustration towards like, I don't know, I wish I was doing better. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And like, if I were you, I would look at it relatively, you know. I was actually just having this conversation with my parents and a cousin of mine, kind of around stoicism and what guides your actions and responses. It's like, to your point, it's the other person that wants to give, and they should be giving with the intent of not receiving anything back. But like, when you look at it relatively, it's like, if I, you know, if you're a millionaire and you pay for $1,000 dinner for five people, like that's a very small fraction of your net worth. Now, if you're someone who is worth $100,000 or say $10,000 and you pay for the same dinner, that's 10% of your net worth. Like, that's a significant amount. So I think it's all relative on what you give. And people talk about this all the time. It's like, if you're broke and you're not willing to give a dollar, then when you're rich, you're not going to be, or if you're worth, you know, $100 and you're not willing to give a dollar, then there's a very small chance that when you're worth $100 million, you're not going to give a million. So I think being generous at all aspects of your life, as long as you can kind of afford to do that, is never necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. I also, on that note, I heard a really, and I forget, I think it was an actor that said this, but I think he said fame and fortune does not churn you into someone else. It reveals who you really are.
Yeah. Yep.
Which I thought was very, very interesting, because it's almost like when you get to a place of status where, or power, I should say, where people aren't, you kind of get yes men around you now. You kind of, people do what they tell you without asking you, because you're in a position where you can do that. Some people, that's how they've always wanted to be able to take advantage of that. If they've always had that ability, that's how they would treat people around them. So now that option is there, that's how they behave. It's not like they were these really like kind people who treated everyone around them with respect, and then all of a sudden they got into a position where they could give commands and give orders and treat people poorly and get away with it. Then all of a sudden they started doing that. They're like, no, they would always be doing that if they could do that, but now they can do that. So they are.
Dude, I think that's a very good litmus test too for finding out who your true friends are and new people that you want to bring into your life. It's like, understand their past. I always used to, I enjoyed history, but like the utility of it, I was like, I don't know. But I enjoy history now a lot more, and also individuals' history. So like having an understanding of what someone's upbringing was and how they acted during that upbringing and what caused them to do certain things and how kind of like what their story was on where they were to where they are now and what impacted that. I think that's super interesting, because I do think there are a lot of, you know, call it a red flag or telltale signs of, hey, this is something that could definitely be a red flag in terms of this person's looking to use you, or like they've never really done anything. It's they've always tried to hop on the next train.
Yeah. So. And honestly, I personally feel like it's kind of easy to identify. I don't know about you. I can kind of spot it from a mile away, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a situation where someone was getting close to you and you identified that was what was maybe going on and you felt like you had to distance yourself?
I wouldn't say close to me, because I think I have I'm very well versed in psychology, so I can kind of point that out and it kind of sticks out to me. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, if someone's story is inconsistent, like that's a major red flag to me. It's just like, wait, hold on, that doesn't line up. And then you kind of ask more about it and they talk a lot, but they didn't really say anything. It's like, they can't really be, if you're someone who's saying a lot of words but not really getting a point across, I'm always like, can you simplify that? Or, and it just comes a challenge. So I think that's, and you know, it could just be a lack of experience. They could have all the good intentions, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, like this is something you want in your corner.
Yeah.
And Alex Hormozi and Charlie Munger, they both have a good framework around this. It's like, there's 8 billion people in the world. If you even get the slightest hint that someone's off, like, don't risk it. Because I guarantee you there's going to be another person out there that can probably provide similar value to you. And it's just not worth going down the rabbit hole of like, crap, I was a little iffy about this person and it turned out I was right. And now I feel set back 5 years. Yeah.
I feel like you're always right about those things. Not like you, but just in general, whenever I get that sense,
thanks, man.
Whenever I get that sense, like, oh, someone might be off about that guy. I've yet to be wrong. And I'll say this, sometimes I do get that sense, but I'm like, something's off, but I'm still going to give you a chance. And sometimes I'm like, I was right. And I now know what that thing was that was off about them, but they still have good intentions overall.
Interesting. Yeah, I would agree with you. I think your subconscious tells you, it's like, hey, you know, you just get that weird feeling, and it's like, you know, could probably skip on this one. And I think the more I've encountered it, the more I'll like listen to my body or my brain and be like, yeah, don't do it. Not worth it. Just because it's going to set you back. Like what's the best case scenario? You get to the end of whatever the engagement is and it's like, oh wow, this guy didn't turn out to be a piece of shit. Great. Like, yay. So then like the whole time you were working yeah. with them or interacting with them, it's like, dude, I'm so glad you surprised me. I thought you were terrible. It's like, I don't know. You just always have that, you know, almost that, that weight in the back of your head. It's just like, you think they're guilty or you think something's off about them. So you can't really trust them. I mean, trust is huge. Like, especially, I know we can kind of, even on the relational, personal relational level and in the business world, it's like, if you can't trust someone you're working with,
yeah.
like, why are you working with them? You either need to put it on the table up front or like go live to fight another day. I am a huge proponent of just trying to live a low stress and low worry lifestyle around the things that don't matter. And if you can avoid that stress level of like, oh crap, I really don't know if this person's going to pencil out, and then don't do it. Like, there's 8 billion people in the world. You can find someone else.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you.
One devil's advocate I do want to bring up is that sometimes people are purposely looking for red flags like that because they don't want to trust somebody. So they'll be trying to find things even if there isn't something there. That's also been known to happen as well. I've talked to people where they're like, yeah, I did that. Like, I sabotaged this completely. I sabotaged, like, you know, someone I was talking to, she said, like, yeah, I was like with this guy and I kept trying to find things, reasons not to trust. And then he was starting to get pissed because I kept making accusations that weren't true. And then he left and I basically sabotaged the whole thing and blew it up.
Yeah. This is like women overthinking. Yeah, don't do that. That's I think that's more of a flag.
Oh, I've done that. I've done that. I've like, 1,000% done that.
Yeah, I
remember that. Like back in the olden days of college. Like, oh my, yeah. Girl doesn't Snapchat you for 2 days and you're like, oh
good.
She's banging someone else. Cool. Yep, that's what's going on. Well, this is I will admit, I've seen this on one time that was I was right on the money, but another
oh damn.
No, that's so okay. It's okay, I've more than moved on. but there were other times when it just totally wasn't the case at all. So it's easy to get yourself paranoid, I guess, is what I'm trying to say about things like that. And it's easy to carry over baggage from other things into new people. It can happen. It's probably happens to everybody.
Yeah. 100%. Like, I mean, you know, yeah, like trust issues. I think that's been propagated by social media and online today. Because I was thinking about this when I kind of went through my whole personal development and like mm-hmm. really figuring out who I was kind of journey. And you look it back at our parents' day and age, it's like they might not see their significant mm-hmm. other for a week, you know, because they don't, it's like, where are you? It's like, they're not exactly. walking around with the phone all the time. It's like, you see them at school. It's great. And then you have to make plans. This is what used to happen. It's like, hey, you want to meet at the carnival at 12 on Saturday.
The carnival's in town. This Saturday.
Yeah, I probably
meet me at the Ferris wheel at 12 p.m. for a romantic afternoon. And like, But yeah.
There you go, man. And you can't text them, hey, running 15 minutes late, or like, where are you? It's just, you got to show up. It's like, I hope they're there, because that's,
yeah,
what, like,
that's what that became a thing. Yeah.
I mean, it stood up now.
Now it's like,
but it's, yeah, literally, you get
usually
up.
Like, and the thing is, like, if you were contacting them beforehand, then you have a way to contact them. So if they stood you up, you could text the person to be like, hey, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why didn't you show up? And then you might not, but you might not get a response, but like, yeah, still, like, there's not just that separation where like you never have to encounter that person. Maybe that part's a good thing, but exactly, everything else, so, I think, like, is a bad thing.
I think it's a great thing. Oh, what about being able to contact?
No, that I like. Show up. But everything else. Oh. Everything else. Here, I have an example. Okay. When you're into someone, sometimes you start texting every day. Sometimes you might text each other like every hour. And it gets, and it, like, it definitely gets real obsessive real fast on both sides. I mean, if it's both parties at play doing it, then yeah, they're both obsessed with each other. Back before texting was common, imagine if someone started calling someone's phone 24/7. You know, talk on the phone, then you hang up, and 15 minutes later, oh, hey, my God, I just thought of something funny that made me think of you. Yeah, okay, bye. Then you call again. Oh, my God, yeah, I miss you. Like, the person would be like, this person's fucking nuts. They keep calling me. They won't stop.
Yep.
That's crazy. This person's got to chill and do their own thing a little bit. But with texting, it's different. With texting, it's normal to do that. It's normal to keep talking to someone throughout the whole day. To text about this and text about that. And then it's like, oh, well, this person has to respond. And then I have to respond. And then they have to. And then like, oh, well, why didn't that person respond? We just went back and forth for like 2 hours straight. What's going on? What are they not interested? It's like, well, they just texted for 2 hours straight. Maybe they decide to be a normal person for a change. Yeah.
They're going to do something. What is your opinion? So on that point, I've decided that, like, especially significant others, or it, like, when I get into another relationship, like, I don't really want to talk to the person throughout the day, because I want to be able to have that connection at the end of the day where it's like, hey, how was your day? Like, what'd you do today? Tell me something you learned. You know, kind of continue to learn about them. Not just like, oh, what'd you do today? It's like, well, we were texting the whole day. I know exactly what you did today. You know, and I definitely have had done that. In my opinion, incorrectly.
Same. Yeah. I'm guilty of this. I've done this in the past. But I'm not like looking down on it. I think almost everyone, think especially our age, has done this.
Because I think it's, yeah. What is your opinion on just like not replying to text, even though you see them? Because I used to be like, oh my God, I got a text, I got to reply to it. Almost like you're in an active conversation. I've since flipped my mentality around it. It's like, all right, a text is a text. If I don't get back with them for 2 days, like, I'm not going to get back for 2 days.
Depends on the situation. I think if you're actually in a serious conversation, then I think it would be appropriate to say like, hey, I gotta go, but we could continue this later. Instead of just ignoring it completely. Depends on the urgency of it, right? Like, if it was just a friendly conversation, then yeah, I think it's fine to ignore it. I ignore text sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I think I actually ignore text a little too much at times, which definitely happens. I'm definitely guilty of that. I'll just be kind of like busy, but oh, okay, I'll get to that. That's not cool. That's definitely not cool. If someone texts you, especially like with a question or with a, like, what your thoughts on this or anything like that. Yeah. You should be quick to respond. Especially from like a professional standpoint, like sometimes you need to treat text messages like your emails, but it depends on what the text messages are about.
Here's my opinion on this though. It's like, if the question they ask you or if the topic they ask you about is important enough,
that's so call fair.
Because like I've gotten texts. I'm like, all right, I know if you spend 10 more minutes, you can probably figure this out on yourself. So like, I won't reply. And like, it's almost, I'm at the point where the only, like during the day, I think from like 7 to 7, I have a focus feature set up on my phone where it's like the only thing that will come in is a call. So unless I check my phone and unless I actively check my text, I can't see anything that comes in unless it's a call, which has incrementally heightened my focus, because I'm not like, oh, what, this text is important enough? It's like, nope. Cause then I could just like sit down. Same thing with email too. I mean, investment banking was an industry where it's like, you have to be on your email 24/7. Because that's the way people, mm-hmm. you know, communicate and give you assignments. It's like, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, you don't need the email. I mean, you know, going back to the history, it was mail. It just got moved online. It's like someone would send mail and 7 days later you'd get it and then you'd write something back. And then 7 days later you send it. I'm not saying like respond in 7 days, but it's like put aside a block of your time to respond to emails. Maybe one in the morning and then one in the afternoon and one midday, depending on your industry and depending on what's pertinent enough. And then use that as kind of your filter on where you're communicating, yeah. where you're shifting your focus. Cause otherwise you're just going to get wrapped in this loop of like doing work, checking text, doing work, getting distracted from work, checking text, getting into conversation. Crap, I still have to finish work. You get to the end of the day. It's like, all right, I had a okay conversation with someone and I didn't finish all my work, where I could have finished all my work if I just focused on it during that whole time and then had a more productive conversation if I just focused 100% of my intention right. there at a different point in the day.
That makes sense.
But those are my thoughts. Those are my beliefs.
I think it just really depends on what it is.
Try it out.
That's for me. I think it's all about context. You know, if it's like actually like a question or something that's important, then yeah, I think you should always respond as quickly as you are free to. Obviously, if you're busy, you're busy, and that's fine. There's no issue with that. Here's an example. Like my friend Jack, who lives down here in Atlanta, he texted me like in the middle of my shift, and he was like, "Hey, like if you're down to hang out after your shift tonight, let me know. I might be down to hang out, even though you get off late." And I literally got off. I saw it during my shift, couldn't respond. It just popped up. And then I did my thing, finished up, came home, got home at like after 11, and I hit the sack and I went to bed. And I didn't call him until the next day. But I called him, right? Like just to like touch up. And I was like, "Hey man, sorry, I totally ghosted you last night. I finished my shift and I called and I went to bed." And he was like, "Oh yeah, all good. That's chill." It's like that for me was fine. But then there's other situations. If he was like, "Hey, something really important's going on here. I really could use your advice on something. Can we talk after you're done working?" Then I would have been like, "Yes." And I would have reached out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's just super situational.
Very situational. I think you can also train people.
I get what you're saying already.
I'm not saying like, yeah, do that in a bad way. It's more of like, "Hey, man, I love you. You're a great friend," or "Mom, Dad, I love you. You're like, if there's ever an emergency, like I will be there. But from the hours of 7 to 7, if you have something that you need me to answer, call me." Like that is the guaranteed way to get a hold of me. Otherwise, I have stuff I have to do.
Yeah, I have another friend, and so. Yeah. Here's a great example. I just forgot to respond to him, because he just says like, "Yo, what up? How you doing?" I'll get that like at 11 a.m. on a weekday. And like, sometimes I'll see it and I'll be like, "I'm busy. Like I can't chit chat right now. If we want to call and catch up, it's a whole different thing. And I'm so down to do that whenever, if I have some free time, but I can't just text people during the day, just like, just to chit chat. Just like, "Hey, what's going on? Like, how you doing? Oh," and like just having that be a text conversation back and forth. I'm so bad at that. But if we call, honestly, a call with me is like a podcast episode. Like it goes for a while. That's That's also something true. Dangerous with me. Sometimes I like calling a little too much.
Here's the thing too, like with a call,
so
you can
multitask. That's a very good point.
You can be productive. Like I'll call with friends. Or
if you call me, like I don't have to listen.
It's like, all
right. A text I have to read. But if you give me a call, I can just pretend to listen to you and do other things.
Yeah. Yep. I hear you. I hear you, girl.
Yeah.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Damn, that's crazy.
I know. What are you gonna do?
I get it, though.
What are you
gonna do? I'm not saying don't do that myself.
I do think people
that
do that. I call my mom out for that because, like, she'll sometimes call me or I'll call her and she'll answer, and I can tell she's doing something, and I'll like ask her something, and then she's
I
like,
do that too.
Yeah,
I
she
do
like
that
gives
too.
Me that half-ass answer kind of thing, and I'm like, whatever you're doing, either finish it up. Or just give me a call back when you're done. She's like, all right, I'll give you a call back. I'm like, just don't answer the phone. Like, I'm fine if you don't answer sometimes. Just like,
yeah,
I would just 100% rather someone be it because like, I'm pretty direct. So it's like, I'm usually calling you for a reason, not just be like, hey, man, Susan was on my ass at work today or something. Yeah. You know, some
I do that with my family. Like I will call just to catch up. Like there's nothing urgent going on. And some friends too. Like I talked to Thomas gave me a call today and we just caught up. Oh, he told me that he says hi and he misses your cute butt or something like that.
All right, folks.
He told me
fueled
he
by
told,
all these chickens,
he said
man.
Tell Patrick I say hi and I miss something like I miss his cute butt or his cute face or so but he goes and make sure to include that and I was like okay I'll make sure to include that. I don't know if he wanted me to say it on air but
on the podcast
but he wants you to know that.
That's right guys, if you're wondering, I got a cute butt.
gotcha. Well, should we start to wrap it up? This was an awesome episode. I loved this episode.
Yeah, I think we'll wrap it there. It bounced around, and we got some entertainment in the beginning, some value in the middle, and then some more entertainment.
So basically,
at the end.
If you want to talk to me, give me a call, and we'll chat. If you want me to not respond to you, send me a text.
Better call John.
but no, in all seriousness, I think I could be a little better about responding to some texts. I think there's no doubt about that. I've gotten scolded by my mom a few times, and I've gotten better with her. Also, if people tell me that they're actually like annoyed by it, I do respond pretty well.
Interesting. I'm the opposite. Like I will tell them, like, if someone's like, hey, I text you and you don't respond, I'm like, well, one, I'm busy, and two, if it's important enough, you'll call me. And then either they just stop texting me as much or they start calling me. Which one way or the other. I feel like if your mom wanted to reach out, she's gonna call you. If you told her that. But your mom might be like,
I think it's a little bit of, she definitely calls me more because she knows.
No.
But I've also gotten a little better about responding to her texts as well. So.
Well, that's with that.
Let's wrap it there. That's all, folks.
Let's wrap it. All right, guys. Thank you very much for listening as always. This was
I don't know what we're gonna call this one
episode but sponsored by chickens and that's
gotcha it. Dude, we should make it we should do some sort of like
but hope you enjoyed it
clickbaity title. I want people to actually listen to the episode to hear us talk about this because they deserve it. Like like you shouldn't answer your texts.
Let's do it.
Or like or like why they don't deserve your time. Something controversial like that.
They're going to be very confused by the first 30 minutes of it because they're like, there's nothing in this episode.
I ate chicken for 14 days straight. And I survived.
Dude, that would be a funny. That would be fucking hilarious.
How I lived off a chicken diet for 2 weeks straight.
We'll tell this story in the future.
Oh, that'll be so fun. All right. We'll have some fun coming up with that. Whenever you listen, you'll know what the title is by the time you're listening to this.
Alrighty, guys, thank you very much for listening. Continue to give us any suggestions. Yeah, and
thanks so much, guys. Thanks for sticking around to the end. We love you so much. Thanks for sticking with my craziness. Bye bye.